it's interesting with the Texans. As much as as much as the offense is kind of a work in progress, especially on the offensive line, they are stacking up players on the defensive side of the ball over the last few years.
Yeah,
you know, whether it's through free agency, bringing in Azeez Al-Shaair and Danielle Hunter, or probably more beneficially through the draft, because these are the guys that you get, A, cheap for 4 years, and then B, you may want to keep them around, like Derek Stingley Jr. Ben Solak, who was out here, he's a writer for ESPN.
He was out here with the Ringer forever.
Yeah, and now he's with ESPN, and he was out here for a couple days. Mm-hmm. He's got a big piece on Derek Stingley Jr. coming out, I think. Did a long interview with him yesterday after practice.
Yeah.
Interviewed some of the other guys in the secondary about Stingley, Petrie, and I think Kalen Bullock as well.
He's also very high on D'Amico. He loves D'Amico.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, too, because I think he's like one of these new age, like almost like a self-taught X's and O's analyst type guy, and very nerdy about it, but in a charming way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those guys tend to be in love with the offensive minds. But I think he really appreciates everything D'Amico brings to the table.
Yeah, for sure. He has an article that he wrote before he got here, I think. It dropped yesterday, so August the 6th. August the 6th was yesterday. I'm losing track, man. Hey, we're at that stage of the trip where with the time difference and everything else.
You fearing that I died last night.
There was
that
too. Yeah. We'll get
the
to that story
that hasn't,
in the 9 o'clock hour. Ben Solak has a piece, the 20 most important second-year NFL defenders in 2025. And guess who made the list, Seth?
Who?
Well, several people. 20 to be exact. But two in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Two in particular. Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock.
That tracks.
Both made the list, and it's funny when you page down on this list. This is a pretty good defensive class. Byron Murphy, I'm just going down the list here till I get to Lassiter, and then I'll stop there. Jared Verse, I know you love Jared Verse.
Jared Verse, defensive end from the Rams that the Texans will see in week one.
Chop Robinson.
You guys nervous about the O-line?
Yeah.
We're going to get tested.
Exactly. Well, the two cornerbacks from Philly, Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, you know, who were part of a Super Bowl winning secondary.
Neither of whom had as many interceptions as Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter.
No. He just got this Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
Terrion Arnold, who the Texans may or may not have been trying to move up and get.
That's right.
They traded out of the first round, they were reportedly trying to trade back into the first round.
Well, Terrion Arnold, it was, and a lot of that, it just makes sense because the way people talked about him was very similar to the way people talk about Will Anderson.
Yeah.
And all of those undefinable character traits that D'Amico and Nick together seem to have gotten a good knack for identifying. Yeah, Terrion Arnold has a lot of those.
Nate Wiggins, Tavondre Sweat, Cooper DeJean, who I just mentioned. And here we go, Kamari Lassiter, cornerback for the Houston Texans. And Ben Solak says, there's four paragraphs. I'm going to try to read the highlights of it. Lassiter gave up an absurd 45.6% completion rate when targeted last season, 11.5% below expectation for where he was targeted and what separation he allowed. Those are next-gen stats. The more like, you know, just narrative stuff. His ability to nudge, jostle, impede, and otherwise disrupt opposing receivers as they address the football was second to no corner in the game last year, and he only drew four penalties. Four times all year.
And that's notable because he played a very physical brand of football at Georgia, and they were up pressing all the time at the line of scrimmage. So for a guy that doesn't have great combine speed and all of that, people wondered, all right, does he rely too much on being physical with his hands? And he can't get away with as much in the NFL as you can get away with it in college.
Yeah.
And he did a great job learning that. And when I talked to him the other day, that's specifically what he had talked about was he said, you know, I've been looking at what offenses might be thinking of me and where I need to improve. So I asked him, I was like, okay, well, what do you think offenses, as they're looking at your film in the offseason, what are they thinking about, looking at, maybe thinking about attacking with you? And he said, well, when I'm off the ball, you know, because I hadn't done a lot of it in college. And you could see last year the improvement he made and playing out in space without that security blanket of being able to stab somebody at the line of scrimmage. And it was cool. I liked it because he actually gave me an answer.
Yeah.
Usually you ask like players that, and they're like, they hem right up. And he just flat out said, yeah, I want to be better at that. I haven't done that.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Lassiter fell in the draft, this is Solak, due to his poor long speed, but he won at the line of scrimmage so consistently that vertical receivers rarely found free releases at the line and space outside the numbers. His love for physicality was not exclusive to the passing game. Yeah, this is big. A fiend in the short areas who finds no greater joy than blowing up a screenplay.
Yeah.
Lassiter was 10th among league corners in run stop EPA, that's expected points added, and 4th in run stop rate. This is a D'Amico Ryans corner through and through.
Yeah, I think that people really have started to use that phrasing a lot, a D'Amico Ryans type of player. And a lot of it is just simply a lust for violence.
Yeah.
Do you have a lust for violence? You don't have to make it any more complicated than it is. You can watch that and see it in college. Nick had used some phrase that I like, and I'll think of 3 minutes after the show is over. But kind of in that same line of thinking of just, you know, that you don't need the advanced stats to watch film and see whether a guy's got a love for the physical side of the game.
Yeah.
It shows up very, very clearly.
Yep.
Especially in college where you might have some really nice clean shots at times.
Okay, so Ben Solak does bring up one thing that's maybe a concern, and it goes back to something we just talked about, the heavy amount of contact and the penalties.
Yeah.
He says, I remain skeptical that Lassiter can keep up this caliber of play without committing more penalties. Receivers were begging refs for help by the end of the season. But if he can, he'll remain one of the league's best CB2s.
Hey, beg away.
Yeah, yeah.
That is real, though, too, because officials start to get a feel for how different guys play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's lobbying that goes on before the game. Coaches and players will tell, like, hey, you know, just so you know, I just want to help you do your job.
Yeah.
No, hey, it's not about me.
Just planting the seed, man.
I'm just trying to help you be a better official. This is what this guy does.
Yep, yep.
But that's where I've always loved, you know, DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins was really good at pushing off. But it was because it wasn't just random. He knew what he could and couldn't get away with based on his positioning, where he was between the official and the player on the field and everything, and just how much he could get away with. So there's an art to that, and I think Kamari's kind of wired that same way, that he's not randomly – he doesn't use physical contact randomly and without thinking about it.
Yeah,
so I think
he's strategic about it.
He's just got to continue to work at being surgical with it.
Obviously, the other Texan named to this list, we're going through the 20 most important second-year defenders in the NFL. Kamari Lassiter, Ben Solak put this list together from ESPN. Kamari Lassiter is on the list, and Kalen Bullock, not surprisingly, is on this list as well, because we've seen some of the top 10 at each position voting. Kalen Bullock's getting a lot of love around the league this year, this offseason, just based on the 5 interceptions last year and the 5 he probably should have had last
year. He's also the classic guy that you might be watching to watch one specific player, but this other guy keeps flashing.
Yeah.
You hear this in recruiting stories
all the time. Yeah.
You know, college recruiters are watching some kid, and they're like, wait, who's this backup that's always around the ball?
Yeah.
And everything. Kalen's kind of that guy, the NFL version of it. That you might be watching Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley, but like, here, this guy, where'd this guy show up?
Always around the ball, yeah. So here's what Ben Solak says about Kalen Bullock. Only 4 rookies earned at least 1 All-Pro vote last season. Okay, so All-Pro is best. It's not Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
This is best of the best. Edgerrin Cooper, Cooper DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell, and Kalen Bullock. Somebody voted for Kalen Bullock for All-Pro last year. How many national fans know about this third-round rookie who served as the center fielder for one of the most aggressive secondaries in the NFL? After this season, many more should. Bullock's film is unbelievable. Let me pause right there. Solak loves Kalen Bullock. When he tweeted out this article yesterday, He listed probably 4 or 5 of the guys that were on the list. And after Kalen Bullock, he put in parentheses, GOAT. He really likes Kalen Bullock. He says, Bullock's film is unbelievable. This kind of plays into what you were talking about, Seth. He's one of the fastest players on the field at any given time. He hit 21.58 miles per hour on the chase down tackle of Tank Bigsby, which might have saved that Jacksonville game for them. Remember that?
Yeah.
Tank Bigsby breaks into the open field. This is back in week 4. And Kalen Bullock chases him down and tackles him at like the 5-yard line. And the Jags went 4 and out inside the 5. They went for a touchdown, and the Texans stopped them and had a goal line stand. And they won that game by 4 on a last-second touchdown.
And that was a classic example of where Kalen Bullock, a veteran player, might have been in position to make that play earlier in the down.
That
was one thing. I mean, that he would tell you that himself. In terms of really understanding and anticipating where the problems are, as a free safety, it's as much about understanding where the potential threats are and which angles to take and where to align on the field, it takes a lot of time to really get into that. And I think he showed a lot of progress as the season went along. But even when he was taking the wrong angles or maybe aligned like 3 or 4 yards to the left or right of where he should have been, he's able to make up for it.
Yeah.
And the fact that he showed progress on the mental side of the game as the season went along is the really promising. You know he has a physical ability. It's just a matter of really dialing in that part where you end up being this freakishly almost like you have ESP type of free safety.
You spent time with both of these guys at this camp. You talked to Kamari Lassiter for a while and Kalen Bullock for a while after practice earlier this week. How impressed were you by these are both guys who are 22 years old right now.
I think it's I was already impressed by them because there is something about a lot of the guys that they've drafted on defense in the last couple of years, and I think I'm going to talk to D'Amico about this afternoon. That it's kind of a level of professionalism that you don't expect in terms of just how obsessed they are with the finer details. And there's so many guys that it takes them 4 or 5 years to have it pounded in their heads how important the attention to detail is. And I think these guys are just kind of wired that way. They were like, it's easy to complain about kids these days. I don't know. These last couple of years with the Texans, I feel like I see a lot of football players out there that – there weren't a lot of back when I played that were as intelligent or that understood the assignment as well as a lot of these guys do. So it's just it's a really cool environment to watch the defense and especially the young guys on defense operate.
This was the last sentence that Solak has about Kalen Bullock. He said, there are rough edges to sand down. He talks about the drops.
Yeah.
But watching Bullock reminds me so much of watching a young Jesse Bates in Cincinnati. Hmm. If the Texans have the best defense in the league this season, something I'm quite close to predicting, Bullock will be a huge reason why.
Yeah, I think then that little reaction nerve says, oh, wait a second, let's not get cocky before we see this. Like, where are the potential downfalls, et cetera, et cetera. Because of everything that I just talked about, it's hard for me to really believe that either Kamari or Kalen are going to have setbacks. But I said the same thing about C.J. Stroud going into last year.
Yeah.
And I don't feel any differently about C.J. Stroud's long-term future. I think with C.J., the difference was there were multiple things wrong with the offense.
There's so much interdependence with the quarterback and everything else.
That it became really hard for C.J. to take the next step that I think he would have taken if the environment was better and the circumstances were better, where it's obvious on the defense that that's a really good environment right now. You know what? I was talking to somebody the other day from another team who said that, and I won't say which team because obviously he was talking about this team, or the team he was on, but he said he's been in places where he was talking about the Texans where like, man, the best players on the team, it's amazing when it's an amazing environment when those are also the best dudes.
The tone setters.
The best people, but also the best people.
Yeah.
Just kind of like when they're the right kinds of guys versus being on a team where the best players on the teams are just kind of bum people. Like they're just jerks.
Yep.
Or they're just, they don't care about the team. You could be Vince Lombardi, and it's hard to take a team like that and get the most out of them because – You end up spending all your time worrying about this motivational crap.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
Yeah. The motivational crap, I call it crap, but it's obviously a really important thing. But the really good teams are led by the veterans on the team and the best players on the team. And then the coach can really worry about, it takes a whole lot off the coach's plate. And I think D'Amico has kind of created that environment on the defense, at least, where the players set the tone and there's a certain culture. And you don't have to worry necessarily about giving a PowerPoint presentation about the importance of good habits.
Yeah, man, they're self-starters.
You don't want to forget about it completely, but you don't have to be hammering that every single day instead of a lot of the other more fun stuff.
You know what I like about this list that Ben Solak put together of the 20 most important second-year defensive players in the NFL is that Kool-Aid McKinstry's not on it.
Oh.
Remember when the Saints jumped up over the Texans on draft night? Well, on day two of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the party that night, and there's all these Texan fans. And as the players are kind of, you know, it's starting to come into focus who the guys are that are going to be sitting there when the Texans pick at 42. And when Kool-Aid McKinstry got picked at 41 by the Saints – Texan fans went ballistic that they didn't get him. And then they draft Kamari Lassiter from Georgia, you know, McKinstry with Alabama, Lassiter with Georgia, who doesn't have as sizzly a name as Kool-Aid McKinstry.
Yeah.
But there were Texan fans who were disappointed they didn't get Kool-Aid McKinstry. And I swear to God, I said this that night. I'm like, 90% of you booing have watched 10 snaps of Kool-Aid McKinstry.
You like that he's named Kool-Aid.
Yes, you like that he's named Kool-Aid. Yeah. You think that makes him a better player than he is.
Especially for a defensive back. There's just something where it kind of just feels like a and it's ironic that it would be Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Which is, like, not a very scary drink.
At all.
You like it's, yeah, it's not like you
name the Kool-Aid
Whiskey
guy,
McKinstry.
When he'd been...
That's a pretty cool
Whiskey
name.
McKinstry is pretty cool. That yeah. sounds like some sort of explorer in the 1800s.
Yeah.
No, the Kool-Aid guy's a little scary when he bashes through the wall.
You yeah, know, that's true.
A little
that's
bit. A, he's got a big smile on his face, but he's... that's.
Does anybody still do that?
I haven't seen a Kool-Aid commercial in forever.
Every now and then, I think on the every now and then I'll end up like I'll be babysitting my nephew or something, and I'll see commercials, like kids commercials. Because I never see kids commercials.
Yeah,
and I'm like I'm blown away by two things. One is like some of them are pretty funny, but two is like this should be illegal. It's like these kids are so moldable. They're so swayed by the advertisements. You know,
that's the goal.
I'm not saying. Listen, everybody, settle down. All right. Yeah. I'm not saying that you should ban it,
yeah.
or I'm not taking away free speech or anything. But there is a part of it like this is too easy.
Yeah.
My God, marketing to kids.
Oh yeah.
I make them want
brains
this
are
toy
very
so
fertile.
Quickly and easily. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And make them think they're gonna beg their parents for this for six straight months.
Capitalism.
I know. No.
It's capitalism. What can you say?
I never would have said this should be illegal before I had a child. Now I'm like, they need to ban this.
Well, now my kids are out of that age range. I probably said it for like 10 years because it's costing me money.
Oh, that's like when you're a teenager and you're laughing at adults who are worried about lyrics and music.
Yeah.
And now you, and then you get to an age where you're kind of like, well, I don't want to be that guy, but that's, did she really have to use that word?
Right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Live here at the Greenbrier, right outside the Sports Performance Center right here. We've got Kaimi Fairbairn kicking field goals right in front of us. All the players doing some stretching over on the far field. Going to be scrimmage style today out here. So we're going to see like actual, not just plays 11 on 11, but they're going to be trying to simulate, I think, some things, some in-game things,
some situational
timeouts.
Type. Oh,
yeah.
Like actual like TV timeouts.
TV timeouts is
okay.
What I heard, yeah. So this should be a really interesting day of practice, and we'll have you covered all day long here, or at least all morning long, and then Seth and I'll come back and share our thoughts with you. So we've got that going on. Callahan and McNair are going to join us at the bottom of the hour, thereabouts. Sometime here in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll talk to the owners of the Houston Texans. Up next, you got some Danielle Hunter audio. You want
to
hear that?
Yeah, I'll get that to Ben.
Okay, yeah, we got what's a good tease for your Danielle Hunter audio?
It's Danielle describing exactly how that vicious spin move that he pulled on Penei Sewell last year, just exactly how that happened.
Oh, cool.
And how it was a surprise to a lot of people.
Okay, good. Yeah. We'll do that. A little Danielle Hunter and the McNair family coming up later on this hour. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.